Hello, everybody. Can you hear me? Great. I was so eager to present you this. I was coming too early to give this talk. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to present you what I was doing for my PhD thesis. It's actually a part of it. We just published this paper, The Detection of Solar Constellations Delta Scuti Stars. And I would like to thank all the collaborators involved in this work. I think I have to go this way. Right. Okay, so before I tell you more about Delta Scuti stars, I would like to show you why the classical instability strip, mainly the low part, because this is the part I will talk about, is so interesting. It is actually because it is exactly where the convective envelopes of sun-like stars, where they are like very deep and have effective convection, which excite the sun-like oscillation, have transitions like to very shallow. To very shallow envelopes. Please don't look at this here because it's not interesting for this topic right now. I just want to show this is the classical instability strip, and you see that the granulation boundary is at the red part on the red part of the class at the instability strip, so which will cover the spectral types between late F or early F, sorry, and middle A stars. There is another reason why it is so important to look at these stars. It is because we have the so-called rotational border, which is also taking place around the same spectral type. So you can see here that we have the from low rotational periods for sun-like stars, and suddenly it rises up to very high rotational periods up to the breakup velocity, or close to the breakup velocity. And here we can see, so in red you can, I highlighted the stars which are located in the classical instability strip. And in this panel, you can see that the majority of the Delta Scuti stars rotate rather rapidly. And I think this is also the reason why people tend to don't like Delta Scuti stars. So this is the known instability strip. Oh, I'm afraid I forgot the name, I'm sorry. So you see here, this is the location. But you can also see that there are two other instability strips which overlap the Delta Scuti one. And this is the gamma door and the Sol-like oscillations. From Kepler we know, and also from ground-based observations, also from core observations, we know that we can observe the both types of pulsations from gamma doradus and Delta Scuti stars. So the question is, can we also observe the Sol-like oscillations in Delta Scuti stars? In fact, those Sol-like oscillations were predicted by Hurek et al., and later confirmed by Samadi et al., so they predicted them to be present in the cool part of the instability strip. We also have observational evidence from photometry, but also from spectroscopy, that granulation velocities really exist in this type of stars. So this is just to emphasize how the structure of a sun-like star in a very schematic way would look like and how a Delta Scuti star possibly looks like. So it's especially the outer convective envelope. Here we have like 30%, and here we have almost only 1%. But the question is it really only 1%, or how deep is it? You heard a lot about ensemble astroseismology of Sol-like stars, and I will not go into detail, especially about the frequency of maximum power and the scaling relation to the large separation. And here I show again this plot, which was also shown by Tim Bedding, that you nicely can see that the frequency of maximum power scales with temperature, but also with luminosity. So you can very easily determine the mass and, well, easily compared to Delta Scuti stars. It's because you can do more identification, you can get radii, and you can get the masses, as I say. So the question is, can we do the same for Delta Scuti stars? I made the same type of a plot. So here you have temperature, here you have increasing temperature, here are the values, here increasing luminosity, here you have the log G values. And to be honest, I don't see any pattern. If you see one, please tell me. So why is that? This is because we have low order P modes and mixed modes in these stars, and we don't see any patterns which could help to do more identification. It is also because these pulsations are excited by the Kappa mechanism, and we do not know why some modes are excited to our observable amplitudes while others are not. So basically, we need follow-up ground-based campaigns like different color photometry and spectroscopy to identify the modes. But then came Kepler. And when Kepler delivered the first data, I started to look at hundreds of stars. I started to find the Delta Scuti stars. And I actually found a lot of star-like oscillations, but they all had something in common. I could find them only in the evening. And the next day, they disappeared. But finally, I found one star, HD 187547, which I named Superstar. So what you can see here is it's an AJA diagram. Here log G, here TF. Here is the zero-age main sequence, evolutionary tracks for masses 1.6 to 2.5. Here you have the red border of the instability strip. And here you have borders for different radial overtones. And this is where, from spectroscopic observations, we can place our star. The reason for the large error bars are because we had several people involved to determine these values, and we got very different results. So just today I heard it's better not to mix all the values, but to give different sets, which is going to be useful for to model the star. Another point, which is rather important, actually, that the star is in the middle of the instability strip, is not at the border, which we would have expected. So this is the Fourier spectrum of, in panel A, the original data. And you can see clearly it's very typical for a Delta Scuti star, unless, so if we go, if we subtract 16 frequencies, just to better visualize the oscillation spectrum, we can see there's much more going on. And I would like to draw your attention to this part, which is illustrated in the lower panel. And you can see here clear structures, as we would expect for high radial P-modes, also observed in the sun, as you know. This is what we interpret as the large separation. But the first question we have to answer before we can claim a detection, can it be that the Kappa mechanism is able to excite all the modes? So what you see here is for an L equal 1 mode, as a function of the frequency here, as a function of logarithmic effective temperature here in cycles per day. I know, old-fashioned, but here we have the microhertz. So what you see here is the full dots are excited modes, the empty circles are not excited modes. And this is the part we observe. So you can see this is the temperature, this is the frequency domain we observe. We can find excited modes by the Kappa mechanism up to, let's say, 45 cycles per day, but not higher. Even if we accept that the temperature is really off, let's say there is no way in this whole diagram you can fit all the frequency range we observe. The second question we have to answer is, could it be that we observe a hybrid, so a Kappa mechanism driven star? The only pulsating group which could produce such high frequencies could be the Roy P stars, but they actually have very high magnetic fields to show these splittings. And from spectroscopic observations, we actually know that the star is an AM star, so it's a chemically peculiar star. And we also know that in such stars, no large magnetic fields were ever detected. So that's why we exclude to observe a Roy P star and a Delta Scuti star, like a hybrid of both types. The next question we have to answer is, can it be that we observe like a binary system and these peaks originate from two different stars? Actually, we would need to have an F-type star and or an A-type star to observe, to excite these modes, either stochastically or Kappa mechanism. and we would see such a star in the spectrum, which we do not. We can also say that the contamination factor on the CCD is less than 1.5%. And we can also see from 7 different spectra, high signal to noise, high resolution spectra, spread over 153 days, we have no indication of binarity. What's also important to rule out that these Pixar combination frequencies, which are often observed in kappa-driven oscillations due to nonlinearities in the light curves, and they are not. But this doesn't, this still doesn't make the star a stochastic pulsator, right? So another point which is important, so that you know the scaling relation between the large separation frequency, large frequency separation, and the frequency of maximum power. And if we apply this, this is the value we get. It's exactly where the mode with the highest power is observed. Good news. The next one. So it's another way to illustrate whether or not you have equally spaced peaks. It's an Eschel diagram. And in red, we plot the supposed stochastic oscillations. In white, we plot the delta Scuti modes. You can see here there is no clear pattern for the delta Scuti modes, but there is one for the supposed stochastic oscillations. Here we also we plot, just to guide the eye, so this is not the model, to model the star, just to guide the eye, an equal 0, L equal 2, and L equal 1 modes for a model with these parameters. Another important question, so what about the amplitudes and the mode lifetimes? So the amplitudes we measure for the stochastic pulsations are 67 ppm, and the mode lifetimes around 6 days. And if you compare those to scaling relations, they do not fit. But all these scaling relations were actually done in a completely different temperature regime. There is another point. So our star is an AM star. We have higher metallicity. And it was actually shown that metallicity has a huge impact on the height of the amplitude for a stochastic mode. Also, also the power of a mode is directly proportional to the lifetime, provided the energy supply energy rate over the mode inertia is constant. And actually, we observe higher amplitudes, but also longer mode lifetimes. And there is the IM peculiarity, which is not taken into account either. But there is a test which we can apply due to the statistical properties of stochastically excited oscillations. We can test, so if we have like a light curve, we can subdivide the light curve in short groups and calculate the ratio between the standard deviation over the mean amplitude. And we expect to get a value of 0.52. And what we've done was to do Monte Carlo simulations for 50,000 light curves with the same sampling and with the same duration of the data, like our data. And we obtained, also we included noise and different noise, actually. And we got a mean value, a mean sigma value, how I call it, of 0.48, which is here, and with a one sigma error bar. So what you see here in this diagram is the sigma as a function of frequency. And here you see the solar-like oscillations. And in white, you see the delta Scuti oscillations. The ones with full dots are the delta Scuti oscillations with high amplitudes. And you clearly see, OK, they're not stochastic. Good news. But what about the ones with the small amplitudes? By small amplitudes, I mean comparable amplitudes to the solar-like oscillations. What I've done was to plot all these modes as a function, so the sigma, sorry, as a function of amplitude. And you can see here that the delta Scuti modes with a, tend to have a lower sigma value as a function of amplitude. This is not the case for the assumed stochastic modes. If you're still not convinced, let me show you a time Fourier spectrum. So this basically shows the temporal variability or stability of a mode. So this is a delta Scuti mode, actually, with a low amplitude. And this is a supposed solar-like mode. Supposed solar-like mode. And here we plot also a mode observed in the sun. And I think they pretty much are the same. So if you take just one argument, it's not enough to claim detection. But it's actually the sum of all these arguments which led us to the conclusion that this is the best explanation we could find, namely, we observe Sol-like oscillations in the Elder Scuti stars. And I think this is the perfect astrophysical laboratory for all these physical processes, because this question was raised like 2 days ago. So please model this star. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky. Are there questions to this talk? Tim?
Thanks, Vicky. Could you put the shell diagram back up again, please? So, as you know, it did worry me when we looked at this star that the L equals zero ridge one assumes on the left, those six red points seem to zigzag backwards and forwards, and I thought maybe the large spacing was wrong by a factor of two. But it occurs to me now looking at that, maybe that's an oscillation, an acoustic glitch. One can even use the imagination to follow the ridge through the white points all the way to the bottom.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
My question for the theorist is, does one expect to see such an oscillation in this sort of star?
Oh, sorry.
You don't have to answer immediately, but it would be good if you did.
We can. You would?
Yeah, if you look at the computed frequencies of Delta Scuti models, they actually behave fairly asymptotically down to fairly quite low radial orders, actually. The glitch, yeah, why not? No, that's right. Well, that would have to be Martin really to shake.
Yeah, so this was not really to model the star, just to emphasize again. It's just to show, to guide the eye.
That's a perfect thing to discuss after the break. But Mark?
Does this give you a way to check and see if there's a basically a region on the HR diagram where you can always see these things? Because to me, an interesting question is, it would seem like if you really had stochastic modes that were excited in one place in the HR diagram, and the rotation rate was low enough, you should always see that pattern there. And so I'm asking, can you make a prediction about stars that you should see this in? So if somebody did spectroscopy and they said these are the slowly rotating, these are your AM stars in this part of the HR diagram, are you predicting that all of them should show this pattern?
I don't think I can make any predictions, to be honest. The M phenomenon does help because we can say it's a slow rotator or a moderate rotator. So it must be rotating with a velocity with less than 100 kilometers per second. That's at least what is believed. And in this case, the VSNI is 10 plus minus 2 or something like that. So, and with Kepler, we know that the M stars tend to be spread all over the instability strip, which is also not in agreement with all the theoretical models for the AM, pulsating AM stars. So I'm talking about pulsating AM stars. So I'm afraid I cannot make any predictions.
Final question, Sylvie?
Yes, as you know, I think this star is very exciting for several reasons. The fact that solar oscillations have been detected, but also the fact that it is a Delta Scuti star which has AM anomalies, and I mean real AM anomalies. It's not what we call marginal AM, but it's real anomalies. And what's striking for me about that is that it has been searched for, for a long time, not the solar oscillations because it was not possible, but the fact that there are Delta Scuti stars which are also AM stars. And from what I know, what had been discovered before is only stars on the cool side of the instability, which could show, Delta Scuti stars, which could show the mild anomalies. So I wonder why there have not been such kinds of stars found before. Your accent, the accent you put in the paper is that it is a Delta Scuti star with solar oscillations. But the fact that it's a Delta Scuti star with EM anomalies is very important also. And this could have been found before Kepler. And it has been looked for and not found. So that's something I find strange.
Absolutely. I cannot say at this moment why it's only this star which shows so clear patterns of solar like oscillations. There are several candidates I have. The point was when I was searching for at the very beginning, I expected to see a different signature. I expected to see lower amplitudes, like the predictions, and I expected to see separated frequency regimes, which we do not see. Mm-hmm. And if I think back, there were several stars showing similar patterns, but I just ruled them out because of this criteria. So what I will do next, I will go back to all the stars from the beginning and search again. But I mean, to do all this testing was going to take a while because,
Okay, let's thank Vicky again. And don't run away. Because we have, go ahead, Robert. We have an additional talk. That's a surprise. At the risk of the LOC killing me. Go ahead, Robert.
Thank you very much. It's just a short announcement about next CASC meeting, which is the regular annual meeting of the Kepler Astroseismic Science Consortium. So that's going to be the fifth one in Hungary in June next year, and that will be the third one since we have Kepler data. So we are anticipating a very, very interesting conference, and of course everyone is invited. It's supposed to be a closed conference, so you have to be a CASC member. But I see 2,000 of people here, those who are already CASC members and those who are not yet. So you are it's very easy to join, and you can ask me or you can ask Hans if you want to join and exploit these nice data. So it's going to be in Balatonfüred, which is not far from Budapest, and the organizer is the Kongai Observatory of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences. And I have one more slide. Yes, okay, you can see the location. It's going to be a very nice place. And so see you, most of you, next year in Hungary. Thank you very much.
Okay, now I have a task for all of you, because we will hold a discussion on seismic diagnostics after the break, and I want all of you to come up with new ideas. So we have a shell diagrams classically, we have period spacings, we have deviations from it, but we also have many hybrid stars, hybrid in the sense P and G, low high order, stochastic heat driven, and we need to come up with better things. So my task to you is come and tell me now, during the coffee, what would be better diagnostics, and then we'll start a discussion from there. And the one thing is, how much do we have to worry about rotation on mixed mode with a G-mode character, following up on Lars Bilson's worry expressed earlier this week. I would like this type of coherent discussion after the break. See you at 4:00.